we felt and feel still like we're, you know, in the very early days of, like, you know, very similar to like when electricity first came to the house, when Thomas Edison was like knocking on people's doors himself and saying like, hey, you all want to buy some light bulbs? We were like, yeah, I'm sick of this kerosene thing. And, you know, and so built this whole, you know, infrastructure to make it really easy to get light. And, you know, all of a sudden there's like an explosion of all this other innovation, because it's not just the light that, you know, people are using electricity for. They start building hair dryers and washing machines and dryers, right, and, you know, all kinds of other stuff and electronics. And I think, you know, BI was the thing that really drove data initially, like, hey, what's happening in my business? What's happening, you know, in my systems? And now with AI and everything else is like this explosion. And I think hopefully, you know, 100 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, holy cow, those are the dark ages of data, right? But we just want to be some of the infrastructure that accelerates that journey for our customers.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee with Coalesce, a monthly podcast about all things data and the trends and technology transforming our industry. I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO of Coalesce, and here with me is my co-founder and CTO, Satish Jayanthi. Together, we'll be your host for the next hour.
Wow, I didn't even get to warn you, Taylor, about my favorite part of this Coffee with Coalesce event, the cool jazz music. Wow. Welcome. It usually takes like 30 or 45 seconds for people to start to trickle in to any of these LinkedIn live streams. So let us know if you can hear us. Let us know where you're listening from, or what city you're in, or what state you're in, or what country you're in. It's always fun to see who's all tuning in from different places. But given we didn't have a long time behind the scenes, why don't we just jump right into it? We've got an incredible guest here, one that I'm really excited about. You've been on some of our Coalesce programming in the past, but this is a special one. This is one where we really just get to interview you. There isn't any customers on. It's more about the story about an amazing company, the Modern Data Stack, and one that really created the Modern Data Stack, which is Fivetran. And so without further ado, I'll let you introduce yourself, our special guest here, Taylor.
Well, good morning, Armand, Satish. I forgot to grab my coffee. I already had one this morning. Okay. So I've got, you know, bubbly water. Very, very
perfect. Tech. I double fist, so I'm with you.
Exactly. There you go. So, yeah. Hi, I'm Taylor Brown, co-founder and chief operating officer at Fivetran. And just quick plug on Fivetran. Fivetran is the global data leader, or the global leader in data movement for companies to centralize data from places like SAP, Oracle, Salesforce, and 500 different other connections into your cloud data platform, like Snowflake or Databricks or S3 or whatever. So those are the, you know, that's the quick background on me.
Cool. Love it. Thank you. Satish, you want to do a quick intro and we can jump into it?
Hello all. My name is Satish Jayanthi, co-founder and CTO at Coalesce. I'm super excited to have this conversation with Taylor today.
Sweet. Yeah. And I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO, co-founder. And I, as well, I'm super excited to interview you, Taylor. There's a few questions, I think some that date back throughout the history of your journey, just as a founder, as a co-founder with George and starting up Fivetran. And there's also some really recent changes that I think Fivetran's gone through, some announcements that you all have announced. And so we're going to try to touch on all of them. I think for anybody who's not familiar with the Fivetran story, I know this story, but I would love to just introduce it to anybody who's tuning in right now on how the Modern Data Stack, like what that origin story really was, and how Fivetran and you and some of the others that were early at the company actually started that movement.
Yeah, I'll give the sort of abbreviated version of this, but George and I initially got into Y Combinator, and we were building at that point big spreadsheets for big data. We were like, okay, hey, like let's help scientists work with data. And then we're like, oh, let's help companies work with data. It was a little bit of an easier, less fragmented market for us to focus on. And so we initially built this big spreadsheet that had like lots of, it was like cloud-based, and maybe if we would have kept with that idea, would have ended up with something like Airtable. But then we, you know, a lot of people were asking us, like, you know, we launched out of YC and they said, like, how do we get data into this thing? So then we built it on top of Redshift. Redshift was just, had just come out in the market. Redshift from AWS, which is a fork of Par Excel, which is an on-premise data warehouse technology, column store. And then, you know, customers are asking, like, how do I get data into this system? And, you know, effectively, in by around 2015, we built a full stack BI tool. It's probably something similar to, you know, a shittier version, pardon my language.
It's okay. This is Coffee with Coalesce, man. Anything goes.
Yeah. So it was like a shittier version of Domo, maybe. You know, and then a number of people came to us and said, like, hey, look, we just want to take our, you know, Salesforce data and load it into our own Redshift. We don't want your Redshift, and we don't want your BI tool for sure. And so we were like, you know, enough people asked for that, that the aha moment sort of clicked, and we're like, hang on a second. Like, we'd use first principles to just, you know, load all the data into the warehouse. And we want it to be as automated as, you know, as possible, because we were focused on building this, you know, this whole like, you know, spreadsheet editor thing. And turns out, like, that was the real invention, because, you know, the other way that folks were getting data into their data warehouses was through tools like Informatica, like more, or building it themselves. And so there's just a tremendous amount of work setting up something like Informatica. Like, we tested it, it was like 300 clicks to do what it took us in 3 clicks. And, you know, and that was really the beginning of it. And so the pitch to finally get to the, you know, modern data stack, when we finally launched this in 2015 and I was doing a whole lot of sales pitches, I built a, you know, like a side-by-side. I think I showed this last time we were on. And yeah. One side was the classic ETL, where you like take data out, you like transform it, then you load it into the warehouse, because the warehouse was like on premise and also was usually not a column store. And so, and then you pull the data out of that and you ship it to some BI layer, right? And the and then the modern data stack was next to it, and literally just the titles were above it. And the modern data stack was like, you just take all the data out, you load it into a cloud-based column store data warehouse, then you transform it like in the warehouse itself. And then the BI layer sits actually on top of that as well. So that was like, you know, the pitch that I did over and over and over again, and somehow the modern data stack, you know, wording stuck.
Yep. Yeah. I remember seeing that movement in the earlier stages, and it's funny because you bring up the comparison to Informatica, and you weren't there, but George, Taylor, and Courtney came to and did a presentation when Satish and I were at our previous company at Warescape. And it was our first time seeing FiveTrend. This was, I think, pre-Series A for you guys. And they did a demo, and I remember it was like 5 minutes, couple clicks, and Satish pulled me aside there and was like, this is exactly how this should have been built in the first place. As somebody who had used Informatica in the past, these like ETL tools, he was like, this is exactly how ingestion should have worked in the first place. There's no reason for it to have been so complicated. And I think there was a component of this for you, Taylor, and for George, that because you weren't coming from the industry, like, you were able to apply somewhat of a fresh perspective to how you approached ingestion.
I also love the fact or your vision where you guys say, we want to make data as accessible and reliable as electricity. I mean, yeah. I love it. I love that statement. I mean, it's just amazing. Until that point, you're right. And until that point, loading data was a nightmare for everybody.
Yeah.
We just wanted to be like crazy easy. And we came up with that. Like, I think where we came up with that mission of making access to data simple and reliable as electricity was, we spent some time thinking about like where we felt the world was in comparison to sort of data maturity. And we felt and feel still like we're, you know, in the very early days of, like, you know, very similar to like when electricity first came to the house, when Thomas Edison was like knocking on people's doors himself and saying like, hey, you all want to buy some light bulbs? We were like, yeah, I'm sick of this kerosene thing. And, you know, and so built this whole, you know, infrastructure to make it really easy to get light. And, you know, all of a sudden there's like an explosion of all this other innovation, because it's not just the light that, you know, people are using electricity for. They start building hair dryers and washing machines and dryers, and you know, all kinds of other stuff and electronics. And I think, you know, BI was the thing that really drove data initially, like, hey, what's happening in my business? What's happening, you know, in my systems? And now with AI and everything else is like this explosion. And I think hopefully, you know, 100 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, holy cow, those are the dark ages of data, right? But we just want to be some of the infrastructure that accelerates that journey for our customers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny to me because, I mean, we all know so much money gets poured into this industry, but it took quite a while for Fivetran to come out in the market. Like, there was tons of other players previously before Fivetran existed, but for whatever reason, you all were the first ones to really simplify and automate as much of that work as possible and really help build the infrastructure for, you know, this analogy of electricity to be relevant. And so it's cool. But, you know, we're certainly big fans. We use Fivetran internally here at Coalesce. I think it's our most common partner outside of Snowflake when it comes to joint customers. You brought up YC as well. You brought up that you guys did YC. I'm sure that this Paul Graham blog has come across your radar to some degree about founder mode. And so I would love to hear what your reaction was to this whole concept of founder mode and if you feel like it applied to your journey at Fivetran.
Yeah, I mean, obviously founder mode has gone pretty viral. And I think there's a lot of good thinking in it. You know, Paul Graham he's obviously sort of like one of the godfathers of like modern Silicon Valley, I think, just based on all the number of YC companies that have gone through. And I think he's extremely smart. I would say, you know, Brian Chesky, there's a podcast I listened to him not too long ago about a lot of these shifts that he made within Airbnb, where he just realized like, there's too many layers and we're just too sluggish. And so my sort of take on it is basically like, hey, get more involved, right? Like, get rid of layers, start not micromanage, but like just get really deeply involved in the details in order to scale your business past a certain size. Like, when you're really small, you can do that and that works really well. And then when you're bigger, you sort of just start to like delegate and like, you know, and their point is that the people you delegate are more in manager mode, and manager mode doesn't really drive the outcomes that you want. I agree with them that at some, like every business, like at every scale, you have to think about the strategy, the outcomes, like how are you actually going to drive the business forward? And I think there are a lot of people who just fall into thinking, you know, the historical mode of like purely stay within, you know, your direct reports and then manage them and then like manage your way down.
Yeah.
And you know, that's worked for some businesses. I don't know that you have to get to the full founder mode that they're describing, where, you know, Chesky is spending a exorbitant amount of time just, you know, in tons of meetings and doing a million different things. Like, I think that only scales so much. And I actually think that there are a lot of businesses who have done what PG is talking about and created more of a system for supporting the growth that they want without having to just, you know, burn your single founder to the ground in terms of like spending a million hours doing stuff. And so like good companies that they're like, obviously they talk about Apple. I think, you know, Apple was an interesting one in that, you know, they obviously had Steve Jobs, who was the, you know, visionary leader, but then took Cook, the current CEO, who's like an operational expert, and applied these two things. And really, like, no one talks about Cook. Like, I think Cook did the majority of the work to really scale this to a real business. Yeah. And I think the real company that I think is amazing at, you know, the modern or more modern founder mode that will be and is much more successful than Airbnb is Amazon. Like, I think Bezos was the king of this. Like, he created, like, he started with making sure you have the right people on the bus and designing a culture and a set of values that really align to the types of outcomes and types of work that he wanted done. and then set up a lot of systems for managing the inputs, not just the outputs, like really managing deeply, how do we drive the growth engine here? And then there were a lot of like really good, you know, sort of systematic approaches towards how they review these at the leadership level. So like allowing Bezos himself to get personally involved all the way down as deep as he wants to go on a weekly basis. And so, again, I think we are starting to do some of these things ourselves. We're about 1,300 employees now, and you know, we're not at the Amazon level of over a million employees, but you know, I think there are certainly things that we can learn from them. And so, anyways, I'll pause there. What are your thoughts, Armand? Like, and Satish, what do you guys think?
Yeah, it's interesting. All great examples, and definitely some really important executives, like some that are kind of cast in the shadows, like Tim Cook at Apple. You know, I think people hardly ever talk about him, but you know, he's been running that company for many years at this point and has just stayed out of the limelight for some reason. Founder Mode, reading that blog, it was interesting. And it's actually, I don't know if you've ever gone through this or Satish, but I think there's like a constant internal conflict for me as to how much should I insert myself into situations versus let, you know, who is on the team, who's responsible, take on that work themselves. And so I think there's like a balance that you have to navigate every single day, whether it's in your skill set or like it's in your strong suit, or maybe it's not, for something that you're really passionate about within your business. And, you know, reading the outcomes of like Brian Chesky from Airbnb, like he clearly has got his hands in a little bit of everything at that business, even at this scale. And the conclusion I came to, it sounded like a lot of his responsibilities was on the product side, which was his strong suit. And the conclusion I came to is that there's certain things that we as founders do that typically aren't best practice. And that being said, those behaviors that you have, or those, that skill set that you have, is probably going to be unique to you and part of the reason why people join your company in the first place. And so you've got to in some way identify which one of those things are a superpower of yours and leverage those while letting go of some of the ones that are detrimental. And I think we all have certain characteristics that apply either one of those areas. And so figuring out which ones energize people, like which things that I do that probably don't scale, that probably aren't best practice, are going to be the things that I continue to lean on consistently over the course of our company going from where we're at now, you know, at 100 employees to something like 5 trans, and really just making that what Founder Mode means to myself and what it means to our business without compromising or sacrificing some of these things that I probably should adopt as best practices. And so figuring those things out, I think, is like a constant, it's like a constant identity crisis, or like determination of like, okay, this is the right thing for me to be doing, even though this may not be what historically has been said as the best practice for management. So that was my takeaway. Satish, I don't know what your thoughts are coming out of that.
I agree. Most of the key is balance, right? I mean, it's not founder mode versus whatever the other mode, manager mode. It's,
yeah,
as you know, what are your strengths? Because sometimes if the founder or whoever is involved too much, that could be detrimental, that you're not helping, actually, you're damaging. So you got to realize, as Armand pointed out, like, what are your strengths? What are you trying to bring to the table in whatever you're involved in? I think that's very important. At the end of the day, it's not just the founders that are building the company. It's the entire, you know, group of like all the employees that are part of the, you know, the journey, what, you know, makes it better.
Yeah,
I think
I agree with both those points for sure.
Yeah, I think the one, so I just went through my first 360 as a leader. I'm sure you've gone through one of these, Taylor. We're a little bit earlier than you guys are, but they stack rank your strengths. And one of the strengths for me was connecting with the team and, you know, reading the difference between founder mode and manager mode. You know, there's like a concept in manager mode where you really just communicate with your direct reports and there's this very clear chain of command. And I break that chain of command all the freaking time, like constantly. Like I'm connecting with everybody from direct sales reps to QA people to engineers, like whatever it might be, because I think part of it is like I enjoy it. I enjoy being close to it and I want to see if I can help or help move the needle for anybody at any time in the business. And I think I've seen you do similar things, at least certainly at conferences or at different events or when I've talked to you. Like it seems like you've built a brand at FiveTran as somebody who's very accessible and somebody who is there to help. And so although that might not be best practice, I think it's part of the reason why people enjoy working for you and FiveTran and the company. And so that was like one example I had that I thought of, like when I compare and contrast the two modes and like what makes you know, a founder special within a company. So
yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, again, I think I've always taken that approach. At the same time, you know, there, it still comes back to like, what systems do you put in place for ideal performance? So in other words, like if I delegate to someone, but then I go around them consistently and like suggest right. something else, then it becomes just very, you know, it sort of cuts the wings of the person above that, you know, whoever you're talking to. And so it's like coming up with the right system where all of the priorities are well known, the direction's well known, and like people have the agency to, you know, they talk to me about it, like to talk to George about it, to talk to whoever, and we're all going in the same direction. We have the same, you know, we have a really clear understanding of what the goals are, how we're managing that. And I think like Amazon's done a really fantastic job of that, where it's like you can go to any level and talk to various folks and it gets very clear, like, hey, what are we focused on? How are we getting there? You know, the language is all the same. And there's no like undercutting that happens because you've systematically set it up in the right way.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear from you as FiveTran has scaled and you've gone through so many different stages at this point as a co-founder. Are there any examples of items like this or like lessons that you've had to learn that you felt like only became relevant at a certain scale where you really, really felt like, okay, you know, this is the way to run the business forever. And then you realize like, oh, I actually had to dynamically shift my way of thinking or our way of operating as a business.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There's conflict. Every few years, there's like, you know, especially when we were really small, we were growing really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you hit these points where certain things just don't work anymore. So for example, you know, George and I are managing everyone directly for a long time. And then that sort of broke. We each had like 20 direct reports or something. And it was like, all right, we need managers, right? So you hire managers. Okay, great. That solves the problems. But then at some point you get to a size where those managers don't have the experience to run the team that they have underneath them. And you sort of scale that out. Then you need like, you know, VP level managers. And, you know, and these sorts of things, they just like, it's like a stepwise function. It's great until it's on fire. And then you like have to like level your way up. I think on the system side of the house, like we went from all sort of decisions went through George and myself, and it was very like founder mode, to then, you know, we set a bunch of goals and we built more of a bottoms up approach towards how we hit those goals. So we're like, hey, we're going to set these goals. Everyone sets their own OKRs against these. We didn't really have a strong hierarchical approach towards like how we were achieving our top level goals. And I think the markets were so strong at that time and business performance was so great. We were like, oh, this is working fine. Right. But, right. You know, I think as we scale to a larger size, we need more control over our growth. We've had to shift to a more hierarchical approach to how we set goals at every level throughout the organization. That has been a shift from where we were 3 years ago. And the shift has been extremely powerful, but it's been a very big mindset shift, both for myself and the rest of the organization, I would say.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Like, I feel like we're going through a similar exercise, obviously at a much different scale than FiveTran, but a similar exercise where, you know, as we went from basically this idea, this crazy idea of a product and a company, and, you know, investors giving us money and being like, let's go see if this actually works, to, oh yeah, we've got good traction. We've got product market fit. We've got large customers in production. You know, we're now having to focus so much more on the fundamentals of the company and some of the metrics associated with it. You know, some of these financial metrics that just weren't relevant when it's like, let's see if your idea even works.
Totally.
And so, I'm sure you went through something similar as well. And now we're going through the process of actually determining what are our KPIs, like as a company, outside of revenue and product, like roadmap and revenue goals, like what are our actual KPIs that will help actually get you to those goals and for every department. And that's been an eye-opening exercise for us. Like, it's been the first time that we've really gone through it and, you know, got everybody's consensus to work towards it. And it's still in the works, it's still in process, but it's like, definitely feels like you're growing up a bit going through something like that. So definitely.
Those days, it's great. And it never ends. Like, and then it goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And you spend a lot of time metrics and then other things. And again, I think this is somewhere Amazon's done a really good job. So yeah, their framework.
And anything on that, like anything on OKRs or KPIs, like identifying them or determining them, that you feel like has helped you and the team at FiveTran get really good at defining that or determining them? Because it feels like you can go way out of control sometimes on them as well. Like, it feels like you can maybe design too many
KPIs. Yeah, I think you can definitely design too many metrics. Like, again, I think I would probably say, you know, make sure you have metrics in a hierarchical fashion, where you're like, hey, what are the top few ones for the business, and, you know, and really try and stick to those. And then for each department, you sit down and figure out what are the top metrics for those, and you work with the leader there. And you, and not only do you come up with the metric, but you have to get really specific on the definition of the metric. As you both know, like, when you get into the, you know, the sort of modeling of each of these metrics, it can get highly specific, and you want to make sure you're on the same page around, hey, when we say revenue, we mean this, or ARR, we mean this, and this is specifically how it's calculated. And then I think you want to be careful to not add too many, right? Like, it's like 3 to 5, you know, max. Ideally, you know, each leader has like a few, maybe ideally you can get down to like one key metric, and, you know, and then the layers below that, you know, each one will have, you know, each person below the, each leader will have some metrics. And I think the fewer metrics you can give each of them, and the more you can have less shared ownership over a metric, the better. So in other words, like, trying to find metrics that each person has, like, there's one person that owns that metric. Yeah. And that way, you know, it's going to move forward. I think there's also a big difference between input and output metrics, and really getting clear on those. Like, hey, you may own both, but the thing I'm going to manage you on is your input metrics. These are, you know, these are some of the things that we've learned throughout the process. And make sure you have a really good catalog of like all of the metrics, and make sure that like everyone can view that catalog and you can talk about it. There's like a lot of people get sort of confused about what the definition is if it's not available right away, especially if it's a really complicated definition.
Yep. So much of this is right in the parameters of what we do for our product and our businesses for customers. And so you would think it, you know, it's like, it's all a very, very close parallel. So it's been fun watching us go through that same type of journey internally here. And yeah, I appreciate the thoughts there too. While we're talking about learnings and evolutions, I would, you know, I do want to make this somewhat tech focused too, like, especially for anybody listening into this, you know, what will be a podcast afterwards, but there's a couple of interesting things that FiveTran's recently launched, and I think there's been discussions around them for many years, but the first one I wanted to talk to you about was around the hybrid deployment model that FiveTran recently announced. And, you know, we know from working with the HVR folks back in the day, that was largely an on-premise offering, or at least an agent-based offering. Whereas with FiveTran, it was always cloud-based. Like, it was always in the cloud, focused on SaaS connectors. And so seeing that launch, from my perspective, was an opportunity to offer customers the best of both worlds if they had some security concerns. And so I would just love to hear from you firsthand, you know, what was the thinking process behind going down this hybrid deployment model? And like, why is it such a big announcement for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. But in some of the details, like when I think back to even when we launched FiveChain in 2015, we had customers asking us for two things back then. One, well, actually three things, but the two main ones were they wanted FiveChain to run on premise. And and back then we didn't have quite the security we had today. We didn't have SOX compliance yet. We didn't have like all the stuff that, you know, we have now. And so it's reasonable to understand that. The other thing people asked for was data lake support, which we'll also talk about, I think, today. But so on the hybrid deployment side, I mean, our approach was like, because FiveChain, unlike, you know, the Informatica of the world or like you building it yourself, where like Informatica or the older tool, ETL tools are very much a workflow tool. Like, hey, here's a bunch of, you know, here's a workflow tool. You build everything yourself. You build all the paging logic, you build all the replication logic, you build the retry logic, you build the load logic, you decide what schema it is, like every single decision you have to make. Whereas in FiveChain, it's the complete opposite. Like we give you very few options. Like you can just tell us what endpoints you want or what tables you want and maybe what columns you want. And that's it. Everything else is like automated throughout. And in order to provide that sort of automated experience that was fully managed if something breaks, it had to be for the most part cloud-based because we needed to be able to like update code really quickly. And the challenge with on-premise is like once you have something deployed to on-premise, you can't update it very often. And for us, we have 500 plus different connections running that are constantly changing, new endpoints, things breaking. So it's like that posed a very hard challenge. The other thing is that we just designed the FiveChain core to be a cloud-based solution and not to be a deployed solution. And so the architectural decisions we made early on were not really aligned quite well to doing a deployed offering. You know, fast forward to then the acquisition of HVR, as you said, they're a fully on-premise product designed and built as an on-premise product. And they were trying to move to becoming a cloud product. And, you know, I think what we really recognized was the value that a lot of our customers, particularly the larger enterprise customers, put on keeping data within their own environment. You know, when you think about the differences between, say, a Snowflake and a FiveChain, Snowflake, you decide, or customers decide what they put into it. And so inherently, they can mitigate risk by deciding to not load all their, you know, secure data or deciding to obscure it or whatever. When FiveChain is pulling data out of a customer's on-premise environment, we get access to everything, right? So the amount, the like sort of risk is higher in a way. And I think for a lot of our customers, they just feel more comfortable having control over having the data processed within their environment and deciding what data gets moved out of their environment. Makes total sense to me, right? And so as a result, you know, we took all the, you know, learnings and a lot of technology from HVR, built it into FiveChain, and then we've spent a lot of energy and time making FiveChain a, you know, part of it deployable, as you said. And the big difference is that we just deploy a very small, you know, basically like runner or agent that runs, that sort of processes the data, but it's all controlled through the FiveChain UI. So it's a data plane, control plane architecture. And, and as a result of that, you get the best of both worlds. You get the like managed service sort of experience, but all the data is processed and secure within your environment. And, you know, we think this is really the architecture of the future because we don't see a world in which on-premise data ever goes away. I think for source systems, for records of like systems of record, on-premise is here to stay. A lot of our customers have mainframes from the 1960s, 1970s. Those are not going anywhere. And so we want to be able to support them in however, you know, they want to be supported. And this allows us, you know, a different deployment option for different size customers or different, you know, priorities for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy to forget how much on-premise, how many on-premise workloads still exist, especially in the space that we're in, dealing with so many modern customers. And being in the modern data stack, working with SaaS companies, like you forget that most workloads still are on-premise and a lot will likely stay there. So,
yeah, I mean, I think like I think a lot of the data type workloads where you're taking data out of somewhere and you're building on a data lake or data platform or whatever, like all of that most likely, or a lot of that will move to the cloud just because the advances that have happened, especially with the separation of compute and storage, and now with the separation of storage and compute as separate tools altogether, like they're just 100 times better than what you could get on premise. But the on-premise database systems, like, they're pretty dang good. And I think outside of the actual vendors like Oracle and SAP forcing customers to move off of those systems, people will be on premise for their forever. For, at least the next, as far as I can tell, the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, agreed. Satish, you got anything? I know now we're on the tech side. There's a couple of things you're curious about for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one comment on that topic of on-prem versus cloud. I've seen a couple of companies actually moving back from cloud to on-prem. It's kind of, very little, but we have seen that. It's surprising.
Yeah, it's true.
My question is more around the data lake service that you guys have spun up. I just, can you share some of your thoughts, why that service is, critical for companies, how the data lakes are in general, like, evolving? Mm-hmm. You have this open table format, things like that.
So, I think dating back to like the first time that companies maybe in the 90s or 80s started using databases for more of an analytical use case or something outside of the purely operational system of record, people have just wanted to be like, hey, I just load everything into this and then I can do whatever I want with it. And, it's taken us a long time to get to that point. Like, we went through all the on-premise, like, RMDB databases, relational databases, like Oracle, whatever, SQL Server. Then we moved to on-premise column store databases. Then we moved to like Hadoop and Hive, which was like the first data lake. I'd say like the data swamp era, which was like, cool, let's just dump everything in. We're doing it in snapshots. There's a lot of duplicative data. It's an absolute mess. There's no like organization to this data. And then you spend like a mountain of like time and energy and money just taking all that data and transforming it into something you can use within your business. And then, I think from there, the cloud-based column store data warehouses came out, and the big, invention that came with, Snowflake, for example, was the separation of compute and storage. Like, that was like this big thing. Like, okay, now it's elastic. I can put everything into this thing. And I can scale, as much money as I want to on the compute side, and we're good to go. But as people started loading in, they're loading generally just into an S3 that sits on top of Snowflake, and they're running compute on top of that. And I think a lot of companies over time realize, like, hey, they were not necessarily sure they wanted to invest in one platform forever for their storage. And so a lot of companies, like Apple, for example, put a ton of data just into S3. And I think the pressure that then they've given Apple or others have probably given to the vendors like Snowflake has been something like, hey, if you want access to my data, like, I need you to query my own S3 versus your S3. And so this is where external tables came from. And, and I think it wasn't heavily optimized around this use case. And then, and this is probably over the last 3-4, years, something like that. But then there's also this open file format. Like, this is the true innovation that has allowed the I would say modern, yes, yeah, like modern, but modern data lake architecture, which is their ACID compliant file formats like Delta or like Iceberg, which effectively is, hey, there's now a file format that you part of the reason that a data warehouse is better than a data lake is that it forces you to follow the ACID compliant file structure and say, hey, like, it has to follow these particular rules. You can't just dump stuff in here. So now what, the open file formats allows is to do that within a data lake, within S3, within ADLS, within blob storage, whatever. And so customers are now saying, hey, like, the benefit that I get to loading in, all this data in a structured format into my own S3 is that, one, I can put all the data in one location and it's future-proofed. I can then use it within, you know, places like Snowflake or Databricks or both, or, you know, I could use whatever other services on top of it. And so it allows me to, you know, essentially future-proof on that side. And then the big one that we're seeing is that the data warehouses are not really optimized for ingestion. And so customers are spending anywhere from, you know, like 15 to 35% of their overall data warehouse bill is just in ingestion. And, you know, so that's like, it's like using a Ferrari to like mow your lawn. It's like just not designed exactly to do that. It's quite expensive. You know, whatever, you can do it if you want to. But I think what a lot of businesses are realizing is they can use something like Fivetran, where we've highly optimized the ingestion, and your ingestion costs go to zero, and you're loading it into S3, and then you're querying it on top of that. So there are a ton of benefits. I don't know if you know, does that answer your question for you, Satish? Or I mean, you're right here in the, you know, the space too. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
No, I totally answers my question. And I've, you know, as you mentioned, I've witnessed that evolution, you know, of data lakes, where, you know, it was just a data swamp where everybody's throwing, it's like putting all the stuff in garage, but when you need it, you can't find it. You know, that's how it was. You know, I'm super excited about how they have evolved actually to the point where now they're bringing all this database, you know, kind of strengths, you know, what asset compliance, partitioning, all these things. And on top of that, the open table format, which actually kind of abstracts out the storage and gives you the performance. I mean, this is where I believe things are going. That's why I was asking the question. So going back to that data lake as a managed service product that you guys have, you know, how it probably is as easy as setting up Fivetran. I
agree. Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. Is
no pressure.
Spend all this energy to make it as easy as like a normal Fivetran, but loading into a highly organized, you know, data lake for our customers. And we've been, you know, worked on this last 2 years almost, because there's a lot of work we have to do to optimize the actual like processing and loading, because traditionally we always use the data warehouse for this processing and loading. Now we're doing it ourselves, and there's a, you know, a fair amount of work to do that correctly. And then to update the file, you know, the files and all that kind of stuff. But generally, yeah, it's about as easy as setting up Fivetran. There, I will say, like, this is still so new in the market that stitching all the tools together, like AWS and then Snowflake and like, you know, or Databricks, like, that's not quite that seamless yet. And I wish it was, you know, possible to make it perfectly seamless. But again, like some of this, we have to work really closely with each of these partners to build that experience, to be able to do a lot more of it programmatically. And so it's coming, you know, I think it's coming, but it's still, you know, we're in like the 2012, 2013 days of cloud data warehousing, but just for cloud data lakes.
Yeah. That's one of the key predictions. We always do a you know, 1 year ahead prediction. So like the 2025, what's going to be new in 2025 for data and analytics and AI, and both Satish and I are very aligned that the future is going to look like this. It's going to be some type of multi-engine architecture leveraging open file formats. And so, I mean, I remember it was probably like a year and a half ago, George had hit me up and was like, hey, what are you guys' thoughts on Iceberg? And like, since that time's passed, like it's evolved a lot. You know, obviously there was the Tabular acquisition, but Snowflake is pushing Iceberg heavily, which, I mean, it seems like a pretty altruistic thing to be storing this data in a place that's accessible by any engine instead of just Snowflake, but makes total sense for the end user and for the customer. And so I'm really excited to see, you know, I always figured the hybrid deployment piece was going to happen regardless, but I'm really excited to see how, you know, Fivetran leverages that functionality, because the concept of being able to just take the data and no longer have to decide what the target is, and just store it in a place that's accessible by whatever targets the customer may want, just makes so much sense. So
totally, it really, it like separates the concerns around these two, which you'd think is like, awesome. Well, the nice thing with the, you know, like a data warehouse, you just load it in and you're just good to go. But like, and we still suggest a lot of customers to do that. You know, I think it's still a very good path. There is some point where, you know, potentially you want to do more things with the data and you want more optionality and, you know, you maybe want some cost savings and like, then you could just fully separate these two and you as a customer have the leverage to say, great, like now I can just have all my data stored wherever I want. And then I can pick the different vendors for the different types of workloads. And ultimately I think this is a big paradigm shift for the data warehousing and you know, databases. Traditionally the lock-in was the fact that all your storage was in that machine. And so this is like, I think everyone's going to have to invent a lot more ways around like, how do they continue to provide the right value to our customer, to like the customer base. And ultimately the customer is going to win here. And I think that's the best thing is like, so if like Databricks, you know, like Starburst, like all the different tools around it are going to develop more for different use cases and, you know, and be more turnkey in this type of architecture, which I think we'll end up in more innovation, lower costs, like all kinds of good things. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. I mean, we've completely forgot to talk about by far the biggest innovation 510 is releasing, which is an integration with Coalesce.
That's right.
that, I mean, what better way to end this? I know we're a little bit over time, but for anybody who's still tuning in, we do have an integration in private preview right now. I think that was, that came in by, large demand from our joint customers. And it's really slick. It's very simple, as FiveTurn always makes complex things easy and automated for any customer to land their data and call our API and run the tables so that it's constantly at the freshest point. And so that's coming out next month. That being said, if people want access to it, it is in private preview. So feel free to hit up.
There's also a demo, isn't it? Arma, there's a demo that you guys did with
there is. Yeah, we just did one last week as well with Doug, which was awesome. And so tons of exciting new technology advancements. I think one other cool thing that's going on is the Modern Data Stack Roadshow. So we're a sponsor at least at Denver and Boston, I know for sure. And so come stop by, check us out there. We're sponsoring those events, but all these amazing things coming from FiveTran, a little bit from Coalesce too. Taylor, it was awesome having you on. I think we could have kept going probably for a while here, but I'm grateful to have you on, man. It was awesome.
Always a pleasure. Love being on these. So, you know, love doing them periodically. And I'll be in Denver talking at the Modern Data Stack Day. So if folks come, I'd love to meet you personally.
Sweet. Thanks, man. Thank you, Taylor. Thanks, T.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.